Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is ACTGS. My name is Roy, and I am a NetFit control operator for this Limar Technical Net. Limar Technical Net has been going strong for almost 43 years. We're here every Sunday night at 8 o'clock to educate each other, learn from each other, and entertain each other. So I hope that you join me once again on that journey. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual link. Okay. If you want to reach me and you can't do it on the radio, then email is a good one. Now, the reason for that would be either what we used to call mailbag questions. If you can't get onto the repeater on Sunday night at 8 p.m., then you can email me your questions, and you can either listen to the internet-provided audio stream in real time, or you can wait until it's archived into an audio file, download it, listen to it. Also, if you have any topics for discussion, that could either be that you're well-versed on a subject that's come into the news and you'd like to do a short presentation. Very nice. Sometimes people just want to be part of the discussion. That's good. And sometimes people are not really that well-versed in a subject and would like to hear other people discuss it. So that's an option as well. Also, if you have a puzzle for us, we're always looking for usually technically-based puzzles, some think exercises, preferably those that can't be answered by Googling it in 10 seconds, or even better, occasionally I will find a puzzle where the Googling of it produces the wrong answer. So if you have a puzzle, please share it with me. They're very few and far between, but lots of fun usually. Also, if you want me to poke WS2N in your shoulder and ask them to take a look at a space or a NASA-related story and comment on it, you could do that as well. Of course, you can contact Paul directly at spacenetreport@gmail.com. But my email address for the purposes of this technical net is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. I provide a link page of interesting technical articles that I've come across in the past week, and occasionally interesting YouTube videos, websites, what have you. So that's available 24/7, any old time. You can wander over there, type in your browser, roy.ac2gs.com, and it'll take you to my link page. We also have a chat room available. It's been kind of quiet lately, but sometimes it's very, very active. And you can get onto it by typing in your browser, chat.ac2gs.com. That'll bring you there. As I mentioned earlier, we provide an audio stream on the internet. So if you have friends that don't have access to either EchoLink or IRLP or direct radio connection to the repeater, one sec. Don't want to time out. The audio stream is available to you. You just type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the audio stream. We try and keep it up 24/7. We keep it up more than the repeater transmits, because a few people ask to keep it up past the technical net itself. And, of course, I'd like to remind people that MyKC2NJI has a great archive site. Many of the, almost all of the recent technical nets are archived on his site, amateurradio.tv. He has over a million visitors, and the archives go back to the technical net as far back as September of 2006. So that's my link. Let me drop for a second, and I'll be back to tell you what's in store for tonight. Okay, we're going to do the usual thing. We'll ask for questions. We would prefer amateur radio-related questions at first, but we're open to any discussion of any aspects of science and technology, and we'll try to wing it if we have to, or at least to offer some references, some ideas. As always, is 10:15. We'll be SpaceNet report, all WS2S. There's already a couple of images that he's going to discuss that are available on my link page, which again is roy.atcgs.com. Anyway, so that's the plan for tonight. If you're out there, you got a question, or you got a topic, or you got a comment, occasionally people will ask a question and go off and try it, come back and tell us how it works. And that's educational for us all. So with all that in mind, if anyone out there would like to check in and offer either a question, a comment, or a topic of discussion, now is the time. If that's what you talk, give us your first name and your call sign.
Bravo Zulu.
Okay, Rich is recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
KD2VHD.
Okay, Jim is recognized as well. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
KD2YCK, Louis Form Westbury.
Do you have a question tonight? What's your first name?
First name is Louis. That's Louis. No particular question, but I heard you calling, so I thought I'd chime in and say hello.
Okay, Louis. Thanks for saying hello. We have two people up for questions tonight. Hopefully there'll be some more as the time progresses. So we'll see how things go. Rich, W2BZ, what's your question or topic for tonight?
Good evening, Roy, and good evening, group. As you know, I've been putting together a quote-unquote antenna farm. Made up of wire antennas. My first antenna was a inverted V for 20 meters, and that worked out fine. The second antenna was a shortened N-fed long wire for 40 meters, and that worked out fine. My third antenna, however, which I just put up today, which should have been the simplest of all, was an inverted V for 10 meters. Well, my radio won't tune it, and I sent you some stands I did on the VNA, and they look suspicious to me. Even though SWR is low on 28.5 or 28.6, it's low in other points, too, and I don't see why that should be. I also scanned the log mag trace. Now, I don't know what log mag is, but I did hear somebody once say, let me let it drop a second, that what you're looking for in log mag is hip at the resonant frequency. And I sent you a log mag of my 20 meter inverted V where you definitely see a dip, but there is no dip on the 10 meter sweep, log mag sweep. So I wonder if you know what, if that means anything, that there's no dip on the 10 meter, and also my rig internal antenna tuner isn't tuning it. So I measured those radials four times, so there's no way that's off. I just don't know what's happening. It could be the coax, I don't know. Do you have any ideas, Roy? Back to you.
Well, I mean, you send me a bunch of, unfortunately, unlabeled illustrations, so some of them I could make some sense of, and others I can't really make much sense of. There's one that's sweeping from 3 megahertz to 30 megahertz, and it's an actual SWR, but, it's not really labeled of what it is, or it really gets to 1.1, apparently. It kind of hovers around something like the low point is about 1.6, 1.5. And then there are a bunch of others. One of them is noted in, what's more important to me than anything is the units of measurement. So the one with the sweep from 3 to 30, I know this isn't really helping people out there who don't have the image, is in SWR. So that's easy to interpret. But the one that says a log mag, which is only really meaning logarithmic magnitude, and can probably measure a whole bunch of different things depending upon the setting, I think you have return loss set for it, which is a real pain in the backside, at least for me to interpret. A lot of people have problems with return loss measurements in that most people who don't know anything about return loss, if you ask them, which would be best, to have a high return loss or a low return loss, would incorrectly say, well, I guess low, because you don't want to be losing anything. But in the case of return loss, you want to have the highest dB number. They're all positive in return loss. You want to have a high dB number. But other than that, it's very difficult to interpret. You seem to be choosing units of scale that makes it difficult to do interpretations of these things.
The unit, I'm using a one-to-one unit of scale. What's hard about that?
No, what I'm saying is that there's an image where you're doing a sweep from 3 megahertz to 30 megahertz. And if you look up on the scale, it gives you an indication in dB. As far as I can think of, the only thing that a VNA is going to give you a result in terms of decibels is return loss. Impedance is in ohms. Reactance is in ohms. Resistance is certainly in ohms. SWR is in ratios. So I'm not quite sure why you set it up to give you the return loss. I mean, the return loss was high, but other than that, I don't know what to make of. Actually, it probably isn't return loss in retrospect because one of the readings is minus 23 decibels, and as I mentioned earlier, return loss is always positive. So I'm totally confused. I don't know what you're measuring in the one that's measuring things in decibels.
Well, the one in decibels, that's the log mag of the 20 meter antenna. That was just to show you the dip that on the 20 meter antenna, the dip is where it should be. However, on the 10 meter antenna, to have an SWR and an SWR. I didn't send you the log mag of that. Again, I don't know how to interpret a log mag, but I did watch a few YouTube videos where they were looking for a dip at the resonant frequency on a log mag scan, and that's what I have on the 20 meter one. I just showed you what it should look like. But I see here now to a log mag of the 10 meter antenna. I sent you two SWRs of the 10 meter antenna. Well, I will, you say a log mag. When you do a log mag, on my nano VNA, when I do a log mag, it's just one line with a dip or not. And what is that tip telling you, Roy? Go ahead.
WY2U, I think I can help you with.
Please do, Mike.
Okay, yeah, I was upstairs listening for a bit, but I had to come downstairs where you guys could hear me on a little more powerful radio. Okay, Rich, what you're measuring on your VNA, log magnitude for the single port measurement that you're doing. In other words, you're just connecting the transmission line to an antenna. You're not measuring gain. You are measuring return loss in dB. Let me drop a minute. Now, you can actually go through some calculations, Roy, but if you got a pen handy, I can give you some very, very quick cardinal points that'll shed some light on how you'd translate return loss into VSWR and vice versa. So if you're ready to copy, I can give you some cardinal points.
Okay, Mike, the only question I have is, if you don't have the image in front of you, but the image talks about a value in negative decibels. My understanding is, I assumed because it was in decibels it was return loss, but why the hell should it report it as negative dB?
Okay, let me grab that question first. Negative dB is a convention that one uses when you want to describe how relative the return loss in dB is to incident power. In other words, let's say you're minus 20 dB, and that's what the VNA gives you for return loss. The more negative the number, the better the VSWR is going to be. So what that's telling you is, let's say minus 20 dB tells you the reflected power is 20 dB less than the forward power, which happens to be 1/100th, or approximately, if you want to go back to an equivalent VSWR, a minus 20 dB return loss would be about the same as a 1.22 to 1 VSWR. Sometimes return loss is specified as negative by convention, and the only reason why that is done, not to confuse you, but the reason why that is done is to tell you how relative the reflected power is based on forward power. Minus 20 tells you that it's 20 dB weaker than forward power. Does that help at all, Roy? Go ahead.
Okay, but I mean, if it reported to you 20 dB without the negative, wouldn't you come to the same exact conclusion?
I guess it depends on where you were brought up. I was brought up on negative numbers. Actually, that makes sense, because return loss is based on reflection coefficient. A reflection coefficient is usually always a number less than 1. It could be equal to 1 when the VSWR is infinite, but for any other value of VSWR, reflection coefficient gamma, or if you live in Europe, rho, Greek letters, reflection coefficient is a number less than 1. When you take 20 times the log of a number less than 1, it's negative. So, but by convention, it actually does make sense. Go ahead.
Okay, so it's just a matter of nomenclature once again. It's how you want to work. If you want to add the interpretation versus the kind of standard definition, because if you look up return loss any place, it mentions a lot of places I've looked it up that return loss is always a positive number. But you know, it seems like an added cause for mild confusion for people who are not as familiar with the concept of return loss. And as I mentioned earlier, return loss is one of those plain things that if you ask 99% of all amateur radio operators, you know, as soon as you put in the term loss, they always kind of come away with the incorrect understanding that you don't want loss, so you want something as close to zero as possible, when the exact opposite is the case in this situation.
Okay, yeah, that's the second point of what I was going to try to make, and I can give you again some cardinal points. By the way, return loss, definition, 20 times the log of gamma. Gamma is the reflection coefficient, which is a voltage number. It's the ratio of reflected voltage divided by incident voltage. Take the magnitude of that. So if you have a, let's say, 0.3 gamma is a return loss of, let me do 0.33, that's the number I know. A 0.33 gamma is a return loss of
minus 9.5 dB, which happens to equate to a 2-to-1 VSWR. So a minus 9.5 dB return loss is about the same as a 2-to-1 VSWR. Let me drop a minute.
EDH with a comment.
Okay, hold on 1 second. I just want to finish my chart for Roy, and I'll give it to Roy, and then you can pick up the comment. A 6 dB or a minus 6 dB return loss is approximately the same as a 3-to-1 VSWR. A 14 dB return loss, or a minus 14 dB return loss, is about the same as a 1.5 VSWR. 20 dB return loss is about the same as a 1.22, and a 30 dB return loss is about the same as a 1.05. So you can see, as the numbers get bigger, whether they're positive or negative, Roy, as the numbers get bigger, the match gets better and better and better. A perfect match has a minus infinity reflection coefficient or a minus infinity dB return loss. Back to you, Roy. I hope I didn't go too fast or confuse everybody, but there is someone with a comment. WY2U.
Yeah, very good, Mike. I didn't have the numbers available, but the interpretation of most hams is the exact opposite. You're basically looking for something as close to infinite dB return loss rather than a zero dB loss. The zero dB loss is basically an open circuit. It's all gone. John, you wanted to say something.
I've seen this shown both ways as far as return loss. I've seen the definition of return loss as 20 log 1 over the magnitude of the reflection coefficient. That makes it come out positive, since gamma, the magnitude of the reflection coefficient, is going to be less than 1. So when you take 20 log of 1 over a number less than 1, you get a positive number for dB. A positive DB for return
loss. Thank you for visiting the Long Island Local Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Those numbers 9126 on the New England reflector.
Of the return signal, then you want it to be positive, because a negative loss would be a positive gain. Okay, you don't want to define it as a gain in it. It should be defined as a loss in the returning signal. As you said, if you have a perfect match, let's say you launch 100 watts, if the match is perfect, a perfect 50 ohm resistor, nothing comes back. So we get an infinite dB return loss because all of the signal is absorbed. With something less than a perfect match, then some of the outgoing power is reflected back. The loss that you see the signal coming back is what gets absorbed by the load. But I have seen return loss defined both positive and negative, but the book I use for my course, it defines return loss as 20 log of 1 over the magnitude of gamma. Go ahead.
Okay, so again, it's that bugaboo of nomenclature. Return loss is confusing enough to most apps, so this will add to it. But just take away, be it positive or negative, because it's either one or the other. If your nomenclature is written one way, it's always going to be minus. It never traverses the zero point. So it's the higher the dB loss, the better the match is. Now, Rich, getting back, you just sent me email that you said is 10 meters, and yet it seems to show kind of not really great resonance. I'm concerned what might be going on. You mentioned that maybe your transmission line is confusing matters. Now, according to this, it's kind of a dual flight dip. One is taking place at 40 meters for some reason.
No, Roy, look at the very last one I just sent you. I didn't have 8 megahertz in the first one, but the second one I have. But it's the same line. Mike and everybody else, it's The log mag reads minus 13.92 dB at 28.1 megahertz. It's just a uniform, lazy, cyclical line, you know, up, down, up, down. It's just, there's no spike, and that's the lowest the value gets at 28 megahertz. So I wonder what's wrong with that picture. Do you see that one, Roy?
Yeah, I just got it. I'm trying to pull it up on my computer. Give me a moment.
I'm not alarmed, Roy, that there might be multiple pictures that show numerous dips and valleys. That could certainly happen in a broadband antenna, or it could happen in an antenna that uses any kind of matching at all.
Well, yeah, I would agree, but I'm just trying to make some kind of sense out of it.
An antenna that's close to resonance, shouldn't an alarm log mag trace have a spike down somewhere?
At 14 megahertz is the lowest. Is the lowest return loss, and it reads it as the 12.37. Would you see this higher up on 28? It also kind of shows very, very close, similar dip, although it's the high end of 10 meters. So, you know, this nano is not really designed well to kind of tell you what the other numbers are. So I'm not quite sure where it's sort of resonance is going on. It looks like it's kind of at the tail end of the 29 megahertz.
Yeah, well, again,
I don't know what kind of one megahertz is,
if it is a design
that's
supposed to be a single band,
to focus on,
a lot of things could make that not look correct. For example, if you're not using a band, there could be line radiation, if you use a long piece of transmission line en route between your VNA and the antenna, who knows what the effect would be if any RF gets down on the shield as it migrates back towards the VNA. That's one possibility. If you are using a band, the Bowen you're assuming is to be an ideal broadband transformer without any resonances of its own. So, you know, if you have any resonances built into the Bowen circuit, let me drop a minute, that could act as some rudimentary matching. Also, the environment that the antenna is in. If you have some kind of objects or metal objects in the near field of the antenna that exhibit any kind of resonant behavior, in the band where you're trying to do the measurement, that could influence the behavior too. So there could be a lot of things going on, Roy, you need to kind of figure out exactly what it is that you've got. Let me ask Rich if this is a single, or if this design is supposed to be a single band antenna. In other words, a dipole that's only cut to one band. Is that what you're trying to measure, Rich? Over. Did we lose Rich?
It is very possible that he timed out the link because he was doubling with you at the beginning, and then he went quiet, which I assumed was the finish of his sentence. But what probably happened is that the same situation happened last week. He was talking too long. He timed out the link that connects the two repeaters, and we have to keep it quiet for about 30 seconds just to make sure that link resets, or at least that worked last week. So let's give the repeater the silent treatment for about 20, 30 seconds, see if it works.
Is his design a single band antenna only designed for 10 meters and 10 meters alone?
Yes, that's the plan that he told me. He was just going to cut a shorter version. He has an inverted V that he made for 20 meters. He was just going to make a shorter version and use that. So, yeah, it's a monoband center fed dipole.
And do you know if he's using any kind of an isolating device or a Bowen at the feed point?
That's a good question. Rich is back, so he can answer it himself. I suggested strongly he get an RF show, but we'll find out in a second.
Yes, I have an RF choke of 7 turns on around a toroid and then another 7 turns around the same toroid, the opposite side of the toroid. So that I have at the feed point. And you didn't hear me before, but I was saying on a log mag trace of this antenna at 28.1 megahertz, it's showing a return loss of minus 14 dB, but there is no spike down on the trace like there is on my other two antennas at the resonant point. There's no spike on this. It's almost a flat line. It's a little bit less than a flat line. So no spiking down, which I think indicates something, does it, Mike?
Maybe not. If you could, can you tell me approximately what the sweep numbers are? I know you've got a 14 dB return loss that you said 28.1. By the way, that's about a 1.5 VSWR. I don't know what your line losses are, how long your line is. You have a choke. I guess you can call it an isolating choke bound. Wound, the transmission line is wound. I guess it's wound opposite. You're putting 7 turns on clockwise, 7 turns on counterclockwise on a toroid, like a 2.4-inch toroid. Is that what you got, Rich?
I have a 2-inch toroid, 43 material, a 240-43. I have 7 and 7, but no, they're not counterclockwise, Mike.
I'm not sure why you've got... Doesn't that just mean you got 14 turns somehow spaced across the coil?
That's what I thought. You know, it's in line. You know, it's not a separate... You know, Balin with best 0239s, you know, it's in line, and I did it right at the feed point. Basically, there are 7 turns, then I cross the toroid, another 7 turns, but they're in the same direction as the first 7, Mike.
Okay, I'm going to get back to that in a moment, but I want you to give me your data first, if you could. Like 28.1, I know, is a 14 dB return loss. Can you tell me, like in increments of a half a megahertz, 28, give me that number, 28.5, give me that number, 29, etc., up to 30. Is it approximately the same? They're all about 14 dB, is that true, Rich?
Yeah, the high points, Mike, are, I'll tell you in a second, minus 7 dB. And the low points, and that's at 24 megahertz. Going further to the left, then I get a minus 12 at 20 megahertz, and then a high of minus 6 dB at 17 megahertz. So the two highs are at approximately the same amplitude, 7 dB. One's at 24, and the other one... I just told you was what at 17. So 17 and 24, I get the highest line in the curve, and then at minus 12 dB at 20.75, and then the next dip, the next low is at 27.65 megahertz, minus 14 dB. That's it. Doesn't go higher or lower than that.
Yeah, now that I hear that, I thought you were only sweeping the 10-meter band. You're sweeping from low frequency up to almost 30 megahertz. And your VSWR is never getting worse than 3 to 1. So something is very suspicious now, Roy. I see what you were pointing out. I don't know what to make of that. I'm assuming your transmission line is good. Is in good working order. You have 2 turns on your ballon, I can tell you that much. For type 43 material, you don't need 14 turns. Because the effective AL value, which is the nanohenries per turn squared of that kind of core, type 43 material, is about a microhenry per turn squared. So, you know, you don't need more than about 16 microhenries to cover the entire 3.5 to 30 megahertz band in a 50 ohm system. So you could theoretically shave almost half of those turns off and make it an 8-turn unit rather than 14 turns. You don't need all of that. That would be more appropriate for a type 61 type of ballon with 61 material, not 43. That may not be what's going on, but there's something going on maybe in your transmission line or something that might make it lossy, whether or not you have a non-continuous ground. Let me drop a minute. But that broadband behavior in a single inverted V-dipole is not correct. Something's going on there that I don't quite have a handle on right now. That's Roy, WY2U.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Yeah, it does not look to me like a resonant structure. I'm thinking that there might be some real serious transmission problem. I would kind of suggest that he run a time domain reflectometry on it and see if the readings up until the antenna feed are legit or a little wonky as well. I don't quite think we're looking at a sensor. I'm not looking at anything that looks like a sensor dipole.
KT2WOT.
Okay, yeah, I agree with you. How long is this transmission line, Roy, Rich? And then we'll pick up the other fella. How long is the line, Pete?
The line is about 30 feet.
Okay, and the antenna height above ground is approximately how much?
About 18.
Would it be possible to repeat this measurement with a inverted V closer to the ground and a much, much shorter piece of transmission line? So that, you know, you don't have to have a 10-meter dipole at that height just for a quick measurement, just to see if it's something going on with your long transmission line. Or you can just take the transmission line as it is and put a 50-ohm resistor on the end and make sure when you use the BNA you get better than a 25 dB return loss all the way. And that'll tell you if the line is good. But there's something going on right now that I don't understand. Back to you, Roy, and I think somebody wanted to say something also.
Yeah, Chris is recognized. 1 second. I wouldn't it just be kind of easier? Thankfully, the Nano VNA does have a time domain reflectometry setting. So even, you know, if you can do a quick little run with it, you don't even need to assemble or disassemble anything. And you can sort of get a good idea whether the transmission line is kind of wonky.
I don't know if these handheld VNAs have the kind of precision that you think that that could give you anything meaningful. You know, you got a 30-foot piece of transmission line, which is with a velocity factor of about 60%. You know, the whole round trip is only going to be about a couple of hundred nanoseconds, and I don't know what you can make unless you got a very narrow pulse that comes out of that VNA. I don't know exactly what kind of precision you can get. You need a laboratory-grade meter for that, I think, Roy. Go ahead.
I think at one time, yes, the technology kind of has improved. I don't remember if I used my nano VNA as a time domain reflectometer. I have used a rig expert and others that are in the $300 to $500 range, and they did a wonderful job. Once upon a time, I was
particularly lazy with measuring my extra cables and just kind of pulled out the rig expert and just did a time domain and figured out my 30-foot ones and my 60-foot ones, my 75-foot ones, and my 100-foot ones. So they seem to be getting much, much better. Now, again, I'm not quite sure because I don't recall whether I've tried that with the Nano VNA, which is not as expensive as Rig Expert, but still, it's amazing what the kind of consumer price VNAs are capable of these days.
Yeah, I hear you, Roy. I think what you're measuring, though, is delay. I think you can get a pretty reasonable estimate of what the total one-way or round-trip delay in those kinds of cables could be using a Nano VNA. But you want to send a very narrow pulse down a transmission line to look for impedance bumps and gyrations. I'm not sure. I'm not sure the Nano VNA has that kind of sophistication. Yeah, measuring delay, I agree with you, because that's pretty simple measurement, just based on rise time. And the rise time of a pulse going down, or the leading edge of a pulse, I should say, just based on the leading edge of a pulse going down and the leading edge of a pulse coming back, that's an easy measurement. But to do an impedance measurement, I'm not so sure. Maybe, but I got to take a look at the specs of these Nano VNAs. If they have that kind of sophistication, I tell you what, I'll be surprised myself. Back to Roy, WY2U.
Okay, Mike. I don't know. I mean, I've been able to figure out where the jumper cables were in some runs of the time domain reflectometers. UHF connector impedances are, I think, something like 35 ohms or something. So that's of course a loss, but it causes a little glitch in the time domain reflectometer. So check in the specs. I think you'll be impressed. You know, technology advances very, very rapidly these days. Anyway, Chris, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, KD2WOT. I was going to say, I mean, if you want to just look at the, at the 10-meter band, you'd probably want to set the stimulus range to the parameters of the band and maybe, calibrate the VNA if you're only using this transmission line for that particular antenna. You'd want to calibrate to the end of that transmission line, and then with a Smith chart, I guess would probably be a good way to look at it. Back to you.
Okay, Chris, I appreciate that. I don't know. Maybe I'm a lazy guy. I tend to like to use standard SWR charts or impedance charts. Doing these things through Smith charts, I guess, just the way that my mind works, I then have to reinterpret them. The same thing with the loss returns. I mean, fine and dandy if you're an electrical engineer, I guess, but, it's just so much easier to kind of look at a curve, see that the valley says that the SWR is 1.2 and be done at that. But apparently we're learning new and interesting things of reading these things through Smith charts and return losses. They all correlate with each other. It's just, to me, it's a lot easier for my brain to decode a standard SWR sweep than it is a Smith chart or a return loss graph. The problem, Chris, is that the graph doesn't really demonstrate a resonant portion and a decidedly non-resonant portion. It's like you were running it through a coax cable not particularly attached to an antenna or something that's not quite working like an antenna. This is not a typical single frequency, high Q, relative high Q, resonant return loss type of image that I'm looking at.
One more comment, Roy, when you get a chance.
Yeah, sure, Mike.
When Chris is finished.
No, that's fine. I'll just listen. Thank you.
Okay, let me see if I have it. I just thought also, what type of transmission line are you using in the feed point, in the, as the feed line? Is it the thin RG-858 rather? Is it the thin coax, or is it the less lossy RG-8 type? Well, Rich?
Mike, it's RG-58.
Is it relatively new, or has it been out in the weather for a while?
Brand new. First time it's been outside in its lifetime.
Okay, that's good to know. So I'm looking at the specs right here. RG-58 at 20 megahertz has a loss of about 1.5 dB per 100 feet. On 30 megahertz, so the 10-meter band, it's about 2.2 dB loss per 100 feet. You got 30 feet, so you got one-third of that. You got about 7-tenths of a dB of loss at 30 megahertz and about a half a dB of loss at 20 megahertz. When you set energy down that kind of cable with a loss of, let's say, half a dB one way, that's 1 dB round trip, you automatically limit yourself to a return loss of minus 1 dB. So the best, or the, if you're trying to look for a resonant system, it is not going to show that the dip is as pronounced as it should be, whereas if the cable had been lost less. That's even more prominent on 30 megahertz, where you've got roughly a round-trip total loss of 2 dB. So even without an antenna connected there, Rich, if you just disconnected the antenna and measured with your VNA return loss, it would show minus 2 dB. If the antenna was open, short-circuited, or not even connected, that would be the case. So you got to be aware of line losses when you do those kinds of measurements. Now, as frequency goes lower and lower and lower, line losses start to become a lot less, and the effect is a lot less pronounced. But up at 30 megahertz, you have to be wary now that you've got a 2 dB return loss all the time, whether or not the antenna is going to be connected to that transmission line or not. Back to Roy.
Okay, Mike, I can understand that. I'm kind of transposing your negative numbers into positive numbers so that my line doesn't go soft and squishy. But yeah, I mean, that puts a limitation, a limit on perfect results. It doesn't really explain why, if anything, the return losses are a wee bit too perfect, you know. You shouldn't have a center-fed dipole that's cut for 10 meters giving you a decent viswa, you know, even just the maximum, I think, of a 3-to-1 viswa going all the way to 20 meters. I would assume your viswa would be significantly higher if this was a standard 10-meter center-fed dipole. DDH would comment.
Yeah, I agree. 3-to-1 is a little bit extreme for that kind of a situation. But the gentleman before who said to restrict your span to your measurements, in other words, restrict the stimulus span so that you don't have to look that broadband, that was a good recommendation too. In other words, if you have an antenna that is only designed for 28 megahertz, the 28 megahertz band, you really don't have to sweep from 6 megahertz all the way up to 30. You know, that gets to another point, too. Was the VNA accurately calibrated for that kind of range? There's all sorts of things that I'm thinking about as I'm talking here, but anyway, somebody else comment. WITU.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, we're presupposing that the VNA is in good operating condition and it's been properly calibrated. Also, I've mentioned to Rich in the past that if you sweep a very, very wide range of frequencies because of the way it averages, there is a lot of detail that gets lost in the image that's projected. But while you mull that around, John, you wanted to say something.
You know, with that antenna connected and sweeping over a wider range like that, you should see some peaks and nulls as the antenna resonates or goes out of resonance, it's acting almost like nothing is getting through the antenna at all, and there's something in the cable that is providing a lot of loss. If it had been older coax, I would say maybe it got water in it or something, but it looks like nothing is really getting through the antenna, because with an antenna connected, sweeping, you should see peaks and valleys as you sweep over a relatively wide frequency range. I would agree with you, John. I would, if I was a guessing guy, I would guess that there's something wonky about the center feed connection. That is, it's not quite what it should be. Because again, this does not look to me like a typical sweep of a resonant antenna. This is more of a transmission line with maybe something dangling at the end.
Well, there's something funny going on in that balance, that isolating device. I suspect there's too many turns, and that might not be a bad thing to try. Take the 14 turns and make it more like 6 or 8 and repeat the experiment.
Here's something.
Yeah, that's not right. I may have overdone it with the balance, so... do you think, I guess you just said that it could be negatively affected. So what do you say, back off and just do 7 turns?
But yeah, you don't need all of those turns. Not for type 43 material. In fact, if when you overdo it, the balance starts to act more like a capacitor rather than an inductor because of the parasitic capacitance that happens to exist between turns. And if they're closely spaced on that core, that could give rise to all sorts of different resonance problems. So yeah, I would back off. If you have one that you can wind with 6 turns, I would try that, because that's more than enough for type 43 material.
Right. Yeah, very good. Let me just make sure I have the repeater. Okay. How's about this? When you tightly wind coax sometimes, you can distort the insulating foam material, and by distorting that, you'll change the impedance of the transmission line during the wind. So is it within the realm of possibility that those tight turns are distorting the feed point impedance of the transmission line itself, giving you these wonky results?
Possibly, but I can't see even winding them that tight. The worst that can happen is the strands of the braid start to widen up a little bit, so the line will start to act like a little, you'd have less isolation. Yeah, I can see putting an impedance bump in there. Maybe a 50 ohm line becomes 30 ohms or maybe 70 ohms, but that's not the effect that we're seeing there, Roy. That would be something I'd be very concerned about if that same line was being used at UHF or VHF, yes, where the frequency is higher, but at 30 megahertz, that's probably a second-order effect, in my opinion.
Okay, I mean, ultimately, it sort of depends upon the manufacturer, the specs for, you know, because in the old days, RG58 was a standard spec. Now it's, you know, it's a published spec, but everyone and their brother produces some version of it, and I would assume some dielectrics can take sharp turns better than other dielectric material for the same RG58 spec coax.
Does Rich have a MFJ type of an antenna analyzer where you can do these VSWR measurements, single frequency?
Mike, a Rig Experts analyzer, which I only works when you attach it to a computer, so I can take a look at return loss with that. With the Nano VNA, there's no choice in the menu for return loss. Is that what you're after?
No, I just wanted to see if you can get a second opinion. You have a VNA, and that's giving you one set of results. I was wondering if you had some other instrumentation where you can repeat the measurements. What you don't have to do a sweep, but at least at single frequencies to see if the measurements correlate.
Well, I certainly can do that, but I think the tell-all is that my Kenwood 440 will, if this has a, which it shows to be like a 1.7 to 1 SWR, the internal antenna tuner should be able to take care of the rest, and it doesn't. It will not tune the rig to resonance.
That's suspicious right there, because those Kenwood radios, I have the 440 myself, and the internal antenna tuner was specified. It's a pretty good one, by the way. Doesn't have the best dynamic range that you could ever get, but it should match any phase of a 3-to-1 up to and including at least 30 megahertz. So if you have a non-tuned VSWR of 1.7, in my opinion, that Kenwood radio of yours should take that 1.7 and it should just about give you a perfect match as a result. If that's not happening, there's something going on there, Rich.
Yeah, I know. With my other two antennas, the 20 meter inverted V and my shortened halfway long wire. The antenna tuner in the rig takes care of it, but not with this one. It's not a feed point problem. I mean, I tested it, you know, and it's perfect there. So, I don't know. I got a feeling it may be that toroid.
You know, I don't know if you should trash this one yet. If you have another piece of ferrite, maybe you would be worthy just to wind another one with less turns and repeat the measurements.
Since it's in line, in other words, from the center feed connection, I just wound the toroid and then continued on with the coax into the shack. So I'll have to take it apart. I'll have to unsolder everything to be able to take out those other seven turns.
Now I'm confused. You didn't, I'm trying to collect my thoughts. You have two pieces of coax. One was, in other words, you broke a coax apart to wind this toroid. In other words, when you wound this toroid, there were no connectors on it?
No connectors on it. I just wound the toroid and left about 6 inches to the end of the coax, and that attaches to the center feed of the antenna.
Oh, okay. When you said this coax was new, I assumed it had connectors on both ends. It sounds like one end obviously did not have connectors, and that's the end that you eventually soldered to the dipole.
No, I clipped off the connector on that one end at the antenna.
Okay, I was confused. I'm sorry. Now I got it. Okay, then it's a simple thing to unsolder and unwind some turns. So now I understand what you do. Go ahead, Roy.
Okay, I don't have anything particularly to add to here. So the thought is possibly the RF choke. But let me just say, as long as I got you, Mike, for the most part, isn't the idea that the coax cable is internally isolated from the inductance of the turns, and the effect is in for the common mode currents occurring on the outer aspect of the shield?
Yes, absolutely. The winding turns on the toroid does not affect the characteristic impedance of the coax at all. All it does is it allows the possibility of current flowing on the outer side of the shield to be choked off by the high impedance seen by the inductive reactance of the choke. The bad news is the way he's doing it, possibly with that many turns and that much inductance per turn, could give rise to resonances and also
could promote the fact that that isolating inductor is being used beyond its self-resonant frequency because of the capacitance between turns. In which case, it's no longer acting like an inductor like it's supposed to, but it's acting like a capacitor. Before it gets to capacitance, it actually goes through a self-resonance mode, which I think might be happening well before 30 megahertz.